listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolensky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax.
I'm very glad you didn't hint that you were going to do that. Very
happy. I didn't even think to do it until we started. Welcome to Syntax. Today we have the spookiest Syntax ever.
Yes.
We will tell you stories from web developers where it all went wrong. With me today is Spooky Dolinsky.
Welcome to Syntax, everyone. We're doing spooky web dev stories. I am very happy because I think the closest Wes has ever come to quitting the podcast was when I did a spooky voices for half of the podcast and he asked me to stop. So this has made me very happy, Wes. You've totally made my day. Thank you so much for doing a spooky voice here.
Okay.
This is our spooky web dev stories episode, where we are going to be reading to you stories sent into us anonymously about various spooky web dev situations that have taken place in the depths of the hell that is our career choice sometimes. So
today,
what?
We have two spooky sponsors, Scott.
Okay, who are our spooky sponsors? Wes Boo Boss.
Well, if you have a headless CMS, a CMS without a HUD, it was cut off, where might you host your Jamstack website? Not only at Netlify. Sound like a grandma now.
I know. I love your spooky voice because it's not really that it is. It's just like, it's like witch voice. Is that what you're trying to do? Witch voice?
And the other spooky thing could be bugs. Imagine having bugs in your application. Track those with Sentry. We'll talk about them partway through the episode. All right, I'm back to normal voice now.
Big bugs.
All right, so these are stories that we asked you, the general public, to submit. And man, we got a ton of them. So these are just stories where people are working in web development and you accidentally delete a database or send out an email that you shouldn't have. Or just like these like stories that you hear in web development where something went wrong and you just want to stick your head in the sand or say, ooh, that was rough. So it's funny. Unfortunately, a lot of these stories could have been avoided with a lot of testing or proper staging environment. Yes. So maybe this is both spooky as well as like cautionary tale of what to do with production.
Yes, a cautionary tale. All right. Do we want to get into the first one? Do you want to do it or would you like me?
You do it because the second one is one of my favorites and I want to read that one.
Okay. So this one, Wes has titled "The Most Expensive Boolean Ever." I might have some alternate titles for these as well. Early in my career, I was working at an online casino company. As with all paid services, it was crucial to make it easy for our customers to pay us. Yes. Many payment providers, however, such as PayPal, chose not to work with the companies in the gambling industry. So a big part of our job was to implement more niche payment providers for customers in various countries that we served. This all seems like one of those issues so far that you hit and you're like, oh, great. Nobody wants to support gambling. Okay.
Yeah.
So while I was still new at the company, our CTO integrated one such payment provider. Everything went smoothly for a couple of weeks until one tiny but oh so important error surfaced. You see, most providers offer some sort of way of testing their integration service without having to make any real money transaction. Here, each transaction will be initiated with, among all the usual payment information, such as credit card number, a Boolean flag called test, right? So a money deposit with this flag set to true would act like any other transaction, except for small details that the card would not actually be charged, right? This is very common, or they might have test cards or things like that to run the payment. At deploy time, our CTO forgot about this flag and its value remained hard-coded as true. This one bit of information enabled customers to make free deposits, then withdraw actual money. Ooh, boy. As we discovered the error, a big salvaging operation began. Our operational staff deducted credits from affected customers who still had them and halted withdrawal requests. But with most times, it was simply too late, with no reasonable way of asking individual customers to deposit money that they owed us. We had to accept a massive loss. Our CTO handled the situation by letting the dev team know what happened and humbly took blame without attempts to minimize his role. A gesture that turned out to be valuable for me, as soon thereafter assumed responsibility for our payment provider integrations and could sleep easier knowing that mistakes happen to everyone. I'm happy to report I made it through without collecting one of these stories for myself. So this is a non-self issue. This person, luckily the CTO did it, because that would be a spicy meatball for any individual small employee to make at a company like that. Wow. So basically, if you didn't get it from what happened, is they went live with their test payment processor, but this payment processor, it didn't use fake credit cards for their test surface. It used real information for their test surface, allowing them to make deposits for free and pull out real money is the big, big one. That is an expensive, expensive bug. Holy cow. That might be the most, if we're doing this in dollar signs, like Yelp dollar signs, that's like a $5 sign fail right
that
there.
He didn't say how many, but like, sounds like it was quite a bit.
Yeah.
Next one we have here is, I've titled it, an actual logging issue. One thing we should say is that we have made all of these anonymous. Most people requested, obviously, please keep me anonymous, but just keeping absolutely everybody anonymous for this. So thank you if you did submit one, but we don't want anyone to get fired.
Yes, right.
I work for a logistics company in Johannesburg, and about 8 months ago, we were rolling out a new system for clients who deal in timber. So like, trees and pieces of wood and stuff like that. Our system was simple on paper. Track timber logs using QR codes as they move around the world. Each time a QR code was scanned, you could see one log's entire journey on our app, as well as the entire container's details. Kind of like tracking for logs, right? We had spent a year working on the system with just about all done. All we had to do is generate production QR codes and ship them off to our men on the ground in Durban. I was given that task. My duty was to write up a script and generate the QR codes, print them onto an A4 file, and eventually they'd be printed in laminate. Each QR code was basically what we call a log ID that when you wrote data to, it would update the database with whatever details you put in. How it would work was a QR code was generated. The log ID was written to a database as well as the QR code. That way, we would know how many logs were scanned and could keep track of all the other information like dimensions and so on. So I wrote the script overnight, fixing some bugs and seeing if it was populating in the database, which I clearly remember it was. Important note. As the daylight sailed in, I ran one last test and the QR codes were generated. I ran a quick print and voila, there they were. I pushed the code, went home. 3 days later, the team were on the ground celebrating the 2,000th log scanned into the system. The first batch was ready to go to China, but deep in the tech department, there was a secret. Somehow, I had commented out the code that was supposed to write the log IDs to the database, meaning only one log was actually ever saved to our database.
Oh, no.
And because of an issue with the QR code, that log was discarded, which brings us down to zero.
Oh, no.
Needless to say, the client eventually spotted the issue, and we had to fly down to the depot before the logs were packed and replace every QR code with a new one. It was hot and humid. The average temperature was 41 degrees Celsius. It took us 2 full days of working nonstop to fix the issue, and we delayed departure by a full week. The only saving grace was we had a good time. Durban has some really beautiful beaches and some awesome spots. Didn't catch it, this guy commented out a line of code and resulted in him flying around the world and stapling pieces of paper to actual logs.
Isn't that funny? It's like you're flying around the world because of a little messed up bug. Oh. You have to go take a big trip. That is rough. That is definitely some real world results from just a tiny little mistake. Interesting. Oh, man. All right. This next one, it says, here's my worst coding story. I was working in Adobe Experience Manager, AEM, and it was getting to the end of my nerves. I was adding some comments so I could quickly get back to the next day. The comment was, if this code ever ships and I am not around, tell my wife that I love her and that tell my son, snitches get stitches. It was on the site for 6 months before I got an email asking about it. The plus side of that was I had to learn Git hooks to make sure this would not happen again. So with this content, this made it to the actual like live site. Yeah. Is AEM like a CMS? Like that's a lot of,
I think so.
So this content made it to the site. That is amazing.
What I wonder is like, what type of Git hook did you have to add that? Like if the looks, word snitches ever gets right. in,
just remove all. Yeah. Right. That's hilarious.
Oh, that is funny. All right. Next one is the spooky office skeleton. This one made me laugh super hard. At a previous job, I'm just laughing before I can even read it. At a previous job, I was working on a scheduled email task that went to a mailing list of a given organization. Now, when I was running my integration test, our staging database only had test data. How I was wrong. We had pulled in production into staging very early into the company's history, and I had emailed several of our longest standing, most loyal customers. And I quote, "Hello, I'm redacted name of the oldest man in the office. Let's call him Phil. Hello, oh, no. I'm Phil, the spooky office skeleton." They put an animated GIF of a skeleton playing a trombone.
Oh my God. And that's a trumpet. That is not a trumpet. Yes.
So I had to own up to the failure with the one-on-one emails to each of these customers who thought they or we had been hacked. God. Not great. Oh, so not only did he like goof it up with his customers, but he also like called out the oldest guy in the right. office.
Which is that might be the funniest part to me is that like and the GIF is fantastic. It's very spooky, very skeleton, and it is right at home on the web. That is great. Oh my gosh. Next one is prevent the default of making money. I have one horror story. 3 years ago, I was starting my new job. A few weeks into it, I was asked to create an ROI, return on investment, calculator for the company website. I had a simple on-click function for a button. It all worked and I published it. 1 week later, my CEO and marketing team were panicking because there were no inbound form submissions from any of the forms, newsletter, or website. I quickly checked everything and realized that I had grabbed the element using input and then the attribute selector typed submit without any specific class. So it ended up on all forms. And since the function had prevent default, none of the forms worked for 1 whole week. This is a specificity issue in your selectors. That's great. Oh, so basically, they just prevented all of the forms from on their entire site from working. And that could have been a very costly mistake. I know that a lot of industries really, really heavily rely on their forms for intake and customer acquisition.
No kidding.
So far, what we're learning, a lot of people have made some very expensive mistakes. I've made mistakes in my career, but I don't think I've made any expensive mistakes like this. Holy cow.
Oh, man. Can you imagine? Stick my head. As these were coming in, I would just like stick my head in the sand and be like, this is not even me. And I can hardly read this.
I know. Yeah, I know it's funny because non-devs, you know, people might not cringe that hard, but knowing that like what goes into these things and how they end up being pushed live and who the stakeholders are, like, well, I cannot imagine experiencing the shame of some of these.
All right, next one. This is one that we got, computer magic trick. Way early on, I set up an endpoint in PHP that took an argument to delete a directory. So like probably URL/remove dir, and then as a param, it says dir name equals whatever. I once hit it with no argument and the computer disappeared. Deleted the entire computer. Because it's probably running in like root, and then if you run rm whatever, and it just deletes the entire computer.
Oh my gosh. Oh man. Yeah, that is a lesson in API design. Definitely a lesson in API design.
Sane defaults or checking for required arguments.
Base cases. Yeah. This next one is update user set score equals new score where I forgot where ID. So this is a database operation here where the person updated the user's score without specifying a user ID, which I'm not a SQL person myself. The SQL code doesn't mean a whole lot to me, but the root result here is every time I was updating the score for one user, I overrid for everyone else's score as well. So basically, that's great. Imagine doing any sort of database operation. Instead of performing it on one user, you're performing it on all users.
Every user.
How do you recover from that? Well, hopefully you're keeping backups and you roll back the database, because there's not a whole lot of hope from fixing that one otherwise.
We got that story probably 5 times from people. We're not going to read every single one, but pretty much people forgot the where clause in SQL. And I guess that seems like a design flaw in the in SQL in general, where if you don't provide a where, it just assumes all of them.
I don't know SQL enough to
it is. That's how it works. Yeah. I used to sling some SQL myself in the olden days. All right. Next one is called change reaction. It was the second year of me working at a company full time doing PHP. We managed to get a big project, which is way over our heads. We still managed to get most of it right. I don't know how we did it. Fake it till you make it. One part of the system that we did was a newsletter. There was, first, a newsletter software, which we used through an API. There was the new website that we built. There was the client's IT infrastructure, where we had an old and crappy API, and there was a middleware which communicated between the new website, the old client IT infrastructure. As a result, those systems were all connected, and a change on the website needed to trigger a change on the client data side, etc. Long story short, when I was testing a new feature and triggered a new newsletter, which was sent to all 30,000 production users of my client, but it didn't end here.
Oh my gosh.
Because of the bug, half of those users received this email every minute for about an hour. An hour, because I was at a conference and I needed to drive back to the office to find a way to fix this horror loop, which I was responsible for. Because of some hooks, one change triggered another and resulted in an endless horror loop. Since it was just some emails I accidentally sent, but I felt like people were dying because of me. What I learned is
so many emails.
I could have prevented it somehow being better at what I do, but being careful. But in the end, this stuff happens to everyone. This is true. I, the other day, sent a Black Friday email out, and this is during November. This was in September, and I sent out a Black Friday email, which is almost a year old. And the worst part about it is that you can't stop it, because it goes out to everybody. And then you start getting phone calls and emails from everybody being like, hey, did you know? We're like, yeah, I knew. I know what happens. So rough.
Oh, my gosh. Before we get into this next one, I wanted to bring in a personal one.
Yeah.
This isn't a mistake I had made, but one time we had worked for this conference, and it was a major conference. It was at the Anaheim Convention Center. It was a big, big, big conference. I'm not going to reveal the name of said conference, but we were tasked with building a scheduler app. We built it. However, there was like the whole real-time scheduler thing, and we didn't have the time to do it. So we contracted it out to like a third party. And this was somebody that we knew, and he built basically it was really not a whole lot of stuff, but it was just JavaScript for like infinite loading when you scrolled on a calendar. And we did not check his code well enough, because if we would have, we would have seen that he had an infinite loop in there, and just about every single person that hit. Imagine this, you're at a conference. You're like, let me go check the schedule. You open up the scheduler. Every single person that logs onto that thing is just hammering our server with
you
requests.
DDoS yourself.
DDoSed ourselves, took down the conference scheduler for an entire day during a major conference, and everybody had to use the pamphlet ones. We were in crap pants mode, needless to say. Unfortunately, it was not my project. Well, fortunately, it was not my project. So all I had to do was just sort of stand there and watch in horror as everybody else had to freak out about it.
That's hilarious.
All right, next one is personal MongoDB. I once left a... Oh, man, this is so good. I read this one already. Whoa. I once left a company, then a month later went into my MongoDB Atlas account and cleared up some old clusters. Well, it turns out at some point I'd used a personal cluster for a work project that previous company had even gotten to use in production. Needless to say, I got a call from my old boss. So basically, this is the exact type of thing that I would do. Being like, I'm a big fan of deleting things and getting rid of things that I no longer want or use. And sometimes I'm just like, oh, right. I actually did need that. Like, oh, great. This is like, basically, you come in, you just start nuking, clearing out old stuff, only to find out that one of them was used in production by a client application. Rough stuff.
Nightmare. Next one is called, hello, Rob. While working on the BBC iPlayer, while rubber duck debugging to a colleague, and that's just sort of talking to a colleague about what's broken and how you're fixing it, I stuck a log message into the site-wide alt text helper, hello, Rob. And I forgot to take it out. It made it into production, and every single image on the website had an alt text of hello, Rob. Well, that reminds me of, remember last year there was someone that crashed their server by writing a 10 gig file of success. Oh, that's good.
That is very good. You know what else is good, Wes?
What's good?
The spookiest way to solve all of your spooky bugs, your creepy crawly bugs in your site. I'm talking about Sentry at Sentry.io. Sentry is the perfect place to keep track of, log, and really just manage any errors and exceptions that happen in your application. You got creepy crawlies, you got ghouls, you got, what else? We got skeletons in there. They're marching in with their pitchforks. Well, we can assign those skeletons and say, well, that skeleton really only showed up once I started committing the line of code about awakening the dead. So maybe I should create an issue that says, please remove code that awakens the dead. And then that will allow us to track that as we then vanquish the undead from our site. So head on over to Sentry at Sentry.io. Use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word, and you will get 2 spooky months for free on Sentry.io. Okay. Next one is SSN regex. I was writing a regex function to validate a social security number before being hashed into a DB. Oof. So you want to tell me a spooky story? You start with, I was writing regex, because that's spooky to me. However, before doing validation, I forgot to unhash the SSN numbers and ended up deleting close to 10,000 patient SSN numbers from our production DB. I spent the next 2 days recovering and reinserting 10,000 patient social security numbers. Yikes. Because like, what are you going to, well, what if you don't have backups or whatever, you end up just being like, can you please re-enter your social security number into this site? Like, we lost your social security
number.
That's
one of the most interesting thing about all these stories is how people had to get the data back. Well, went through emails or logs, or because in a lot of these cases, people don't have proper backups running. Next one is called WordPress plugins. I deleted the WordPress plugins directory on the server not tracked in Git before going on vacation for 2 weeks. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
I fixed the white screen of death and then left. I couldn't push updates to the site until I reinitialized the repo and tracked plugins. Especially odd because of how WP Engine did Git at the time. So it sounds like a website was down. Like, even if you throw them in, you have to log in and set them up and stuff like that. So
being gone for two weeks. No thanks. No thanks. Taking the website down right before you go on vacation, always the best thing.
Pro move.
Yeah. It's a pro. One, it's a pro move. Two, it's the best way to have a super relaxing vacation. All right. Logging you in, you effing dummy. I had, this is quote, logging you in, you effing dummy. And I don't know if this was actually effing or the full word here. Once
it was the full word, I amended it.
Wes amended it. We are a PG podcast. I had logging in, you effing dummy. Once go to prod. It was the test auth stuff I was working on, and I never got rid of it until a client saw it. So dropping F bombs in your site. Yeah, probably not something you want to do. I used to be like very, very liberal with my use of not like F bombs, but like just slang or funny things or little blips and blurbs in the code that like would not be considered to be professional. And you definitely learn your lesson when something like this happens.
It happens to everybody.
You don't do that. Just keep it pro. Keep it pro. And then if you make a mistake, at least the mistake is pro.
Next one is called a hostile coding environment. I launched a site a day before I went on a 2-month backpacking trip in 2009.
So,
good idea.
There's another useful theme here to pick up on.
Yeah, well, in a hostel on the first night, I checked my email only to find out there was a major bug. I spent the next 5 hours writing PHP in a non-mobile friendly editor on Safari on my first gen iPod Touch. Fixed it. It was 2009. Was a long time ago. Like, I guess I had a laptop at the time, but it doesn't sound like he took it along. Writing PHP in a non-mobile friendly editor on an iPod Touch. Amazing.
Yeah. iPod Touch, it would be, imagine, what if you did it in like a ClickWheel iPod? I brought the site back up in the ClickWheel iPod.
It was T9 on a phone. Yes.
T9. Yo, I used to be fast at T9. I was very quick at T9.
Yeah, me too.
I remember when it went to the full-size keyboards, I was like, definitely got slower. All right. A graceful exit. I took the master PSD template for a monthly email blast and destroyed it while building out assets. Back when slicing was commonplace. Yeah. To get a background, this is what you did, because you had largely raster based sites, right? So you would do the site in Photoshop, you'd slice it all up. And in the process of that, I don't know about US, but I would like do what this user is saying. And I would actually destructively manipulate this thing to get at like a rat getting at the cheese. I'm scratching and clawing until I get all of the graphics I need to the site.
Yeah, because sometimes you had to like rearrange people's like folders and stuff like that.
Yeah, you had to get to that content. And it wasn't as easy as getting the CSS to just do it. So this user, they basically destroyed the master email PSD template. No biggie until I hit save on the master. Quietly closed the file in hopes no one would figure out it was me. I left the company a few weeks later. So they basically destroyed the master PSD template and was just like, all right, I'm out.
This was like big back then. Like back, a lot of companies just used Dropbox or like a local file server to sync files. And there was
we had a local file store. Yeah.
There was no backup or version control. And if you goofed something up, it was gone.
Backup and version control was final master PSD underscore final two, you know.
So good. Next one is a favicon DDoS. I DDoSed our own website when I forgot to include a favicon back in 2010. This in turn gave a fully fledged 404 page on every favicon request, increasing bandwidth needed to serve the site in an order of gigabits per second. So this one puzzled me a little because I don't remember having this issue, but like when a favicon is not there, it obviously serves up your 404 page. If your 404 page had significant resources on it that then requested more resources, you could DDoS yourself. Rough.
Any self DDoS, not so good. All right, next one. Common sense. I didn't use sense to store how much a client should be charged. Accounting was trying to figure out why we were only getting 10% of what we were owed for months. So this is, what do they call these? Like a shifting decimal error or something like that? Where like, in fact, this was the plot point of the movie Office Space when they were trying to steal pennies or fractions of a penny. And they accidentally shifted a mundane detail, like a decimal point, a couple of places, resulting in a much different figure than that was accounted for.
Or they stored it with like a, like you're using like a stored as a string and you try to parse that into a number and the base is not 10, but 8 and whatever. Mm. There's a lot of bad things that can happen when you don't store how much things cost in a non-decimal value. Next one is, I got permission. This one's for all the Canadians out there. I got permission to say which company this was because I'll tell you why it was hilarious in just a second because of people in Canada will know who this is. So Indigo.ca is the biggest bookstore in Canada. They've got bookstores everywhere and online. They're huge for that. Indigo.ca once went down because the Cloudflare CDNJS had a bug that served a random piece of content instead of whatever you were requesting. So before we had like bundlers and stuff, it was popular to load in your libraries in via a CDN URL. And the reason behind that is because if somebody loaded jQuery from the same URL that your website, then they would already have it in their cache and it would go quicker. So people always use the CDN.js website for a long time. In our case, we were requesting require.js. Since this request was valid, HTTP 200, there was no easy way to know if it was failing, aside from checking the contents of the module that worked. The entire site failed to load white page. So like the whole thing just didn't work at all. And Heather, yes, that Heather. So this is only funny to Canadians, but if you go into Indigo, there'll be a sticker on the books right when you come in. There's books like right there, and it says Heather's pick. And it's this big gold sticker. I have one on my laptop because I think it's hilarious. It says Heather's pick. So Heather, yes, that Heather, wanted to know which vendor was responsible for taking down her site.
Oh, no, Heather.
I can only imagine the CTO and VPs at that time trying to explain open source CDN to her. Needless to say, we changed it to a local copy and checked its contents after that.
Oh. That's a thing that people say you could get burned by, but I had never actually heard somebody getting burned by this. So that's great.
Yeah. Although I'm just going to say out there for one of our sponsors today, if they had Sentry, they would be able to see the actual syntax error that happened when they tried to load require.js.
Look at you bringing our sponsor back around. Yeah. Well, if we want to maybe do another spooky sponsor transition, one of our sponsors today will give you some very spooky behavior when you push to your Git repo from your site. It automatically builds it without you having to set it up. And I'm talking about Netlify at netlify.com. Netlify is the host for all of your front end content and more. Wes, do you want to talk about Netlify?
Yeah, so Netlify is the host for your Jamstack website. And what's kind of cool is that Netlify also has a whole host of other features that it gives you alongside the building and deploying and caching and all that good stuff that we probably know about. But they do things like contact forms. So like that's a tricky thing. If you're doing a Jamstack website, how do you do a contact form, right? So they offer that. They've got plugins for AMP, Algolia. If you want to implement search in a Jamstack website, you can use Algolia. They've got plugins for all of that stuff. They've got all kinds of really neat analytics stuff built in. So it's kind of cool, like, because whenever you mention the amazingness of Jamstack, inevitably that comes along. People say, what about contact form, serverless functions, search, all of these things, login, CMS, all of that. And Netlify offers all of that as well, which is pretty cool. So check it out, netlify.com/syntax. You can sign up and check it out right on there, whether you're using a Gatsby or a Next, or it's kind of cool. They have Sanity, Stripe, 11D, which is a really cool static site generator. So check it out, netlify.com/syntax.
Sick. All right. Next one is don't leave the country. Hey, Wes, I'm going to put Ann Scott in here because you didn't say Ann Scott.
This one is specifically a friend of mine, which I was so surprised to hear the story.
That's great. They should also say, hey, Scott. That'd be nice.
Just I'll put it in. Here we go.
Hey, Wes, saw your post about horror stories. Oh, yeah. Wes just added Scott with an exclamation point, and I appreciate that. Hey, Wes and Scott, saw your post about horror stories. A few years ago, my client's husband was arrested for embezzling. he was a high up at a Canadian telecom company, and the feds called me in and told me the website I built were being paid with illegal money, so my business was under investigation for laundering. I had to hire a criminal lawyer and was told not to leave the country or I could face arrest. Needless to say, there were additional clauses that I added to my contracts after that. If we want to have like a tier of, you know, how big of an F up, or I guess this isn't on the user's part or whatever, if you want to like consequences for building our websites and stuff, this is very high up there on very extreme consequences being investigated by the feds. Yeah, that is a scary situation.
I ended up following up with my contact with the story. And I said, what did you add to your contracts to say, like, don't involve me in your embezzlement? They said, I added that if the client does anything that requires me to pay any professionals, like legal fees, they would be charged back to them. And they said, ultimately, it was okay because I had all of my books in order, could prove my sources of income from 2 years prior. Whew, lesson learned. Oh, keep your books in order.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a good story for a FreshBooks ad transition. Are you involved in embezzlement?
We can prove it. We'll have your finances around. Yep.
Oh, that's good. All right. Next one we have here is called the Apostrophe Catastrophe. I ran a contest for a radio show, created a form for users to submit answers to a weekly question. 1 week's answer included an apostrophe. No entries were recorded that week.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's something you don't even think to write in your tests, right? That's the kind of test that you write after the error pops up.
Yeah, there's a lot of tests that are right after the error pops up. Oh, boy. Oopsies. This next one's an oopsie. It's called ENV. I posted a .env file one time. Nuff said. So, yeah, they put in a .env file to GitHub, I would assume, or somewhere public. And, they posted it. So, what, they posted in, like, Reddit or Twitter or Discord or something? Either way, .env, lots of secrets. No thanks.
Next one, a Christmas miracle. I'm not sure if I told you one this last year, which you didn't. I took down a production server at Christmas time with some poorly optimized SQL and stored procs. The app was for low-income families to get assistance purchasing holiday dinner. The production server hosted over a dozen database, all that which became unavailable. Oh. Can you imagine taking away Christmas dinner from families in need?
Dude, yeah, some of these, the stakes are so high on these. It's just, it's very, I'm like cringed into the back of my chair here. The $1 million bill. When I'm interviewing a candidate, I like to ask them to tell me about a time they made a mistake and how they resolved it. To make that vulnerability easier for a nervous candidate, I tell them a time where I wrote in a SQL update statement without the where argument, which destroyed 13 records on production. One candidate we interviewed shared his story. He was configuring a utility that would spool up an AWS server, upload a video, transcode it, transfer the video, and then delete the server. It was going well until one Friday, he pushed some code that broke the delete server step. He got back to work on Monday with a $1 million bill from Amazon.com. So let me tell you, I also woke up one day with a very, very costly AWS bill. I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I don't know what happened, if it was an access issue or something, but I had been, and I don't know if it was like hacked necessarily, but somebody got access to an API key that allowed them to spool up new servers on my AWS account. And I woke up and there were hundreds of servers doing mining Bitcoin or something. Who knows? Yeah. And Amazon had a bill for, it was like $30,000. And I had to email them and be like, and so they were like, well, if you can get rid of these and secure your stuff, then we can move on. That happened to me, I think it was like a few years ago, but it was a scary situation. I was like looking at that bill, like, holy cow. And luckily AWS is reasonable enough that if you fix up your stuff, they rescind any of that.
That just goes to show the power of the cloud, really.
Yes,
like the fact that you can spin up $1 million worth of equipment over a weekend. And obviously, so he kept those servers running, which means that no one else can use those servers. So you're paying, usually with the serverless function, you pay for 3 seconds and then they shut the server down. But if you're, especially with like video servers that probably have graphics cards hooked up to them, and you're running them for like 50 hours instead of like 12 seconds, that's going to be expensive.
Yeah, $1 million.
$1 million. Next one, the hacker who dropped the DB. So I was around 2 to 3 months into my first web dev job and was meaning to truncate the order table for a pretty big shop locally. Instead, I did it on production. ooh. 2 minutes later, my boss walks in and tells me that there's a bug in the admin interface and orders are not showing up. That's when I realized what I had done. I got so scared. I command queued the SQL Pro and acted like I didn't know anything.
I didn't know it. Didn't see anything.
We were in the office until 11 p.m. fixing it up. And luckily, we could restore all data since we had query logs enabled for replication. So that's how a lot of times people like fix these database issues is they go back into emails that were sent or logs, and they have to parse the data out of those logs or emails and put them back into the database. Then they assumed it was a hacking attempt and malicious script and spent quite some time to try to find the hacker. Well, I acted like I didn't know anything. I never confessed except to two very close colleagues. I quit the job after three otherwise wonderful years. Sweat emoji.
Oh, yeah. All right. We got a hefty one here. So my story takes place in 2016 to 2017. I was hired by a consulting company to work on EpServer. It's a CMS implementation. I've never heard of EpServer.
No.
My skill level at the time was probably just barely above mid-level, but mainly C# and .NET tech. Well, maybe why I haven't heard of it. Not so much JavaScript. I was a pretty fair hand with the internals of the CMS, though, so I thought I could figure it out. Also, I reasoned a bit that my tech lead had a decade of experience, so I could lean on him a bit. Arriving on site was the first thing the client told us was no frameworks, plain JS or jQuery only. But then we'll be Ajaxing in the widgets from the CMS to other projects so the JavaScript can't conflict. So, okay, so you got immediately you got to deal with a whole bunch of version stuff going on here. So when I asked what version of jQuery the other projects were using, he said, oh, various. Some version 2, others on version 1.9. That's not a problem, right? Sounded bad to me. Wouldn't that be rough to know whether your code will work? Yes, I think that does sound rough to me as well. My other tech lead thought, no problem, we can do it. Okay, phew. At least my tech lead had the goods. Over the next week or so, while we familiarized ourselves with the project, the client would make some more restrictions around the JavaScript and CSS to use, like no build steps, no jQuery plugins, et cetera, et cetera. The tech lead would sagely nod his head, no problem. Okay, this tech lead. No, not a lot of problems with this tech lead. So we start working, and a few weeks in, I'm struggling with a problem. Trying to reason through a code should work versus the written requirements. I ask my tech lead to come over, and I'm explaining the code, and he says, what is this tool you're using here? I had a dual monitor set up with one screen that had Chrome Dev Tools on the other, and I had the web page I was working on. He was gesturing at the Dev Tools. I didn't have any fancy plugins or anything. It was standard Dev Tools. I mean, this, the console? No, what's this tool? It seems pretty useful. You mean the Dev Tools? Oh, yes, that's built into Chrome. My heart was in my stomach. Oh, he doesn't know Chrome Dev Tools? What else might he not know? Am I the one who's strong? Or am I the one who's wrong? Maybe DevTools aren't standard tooling. Oh, no. From a place of pure self-doubt, without holding judgment on the expert tools, I said, so what do you use? And he shows me his setup. He uses an elaborate system of alert statements to debug his code. I keep a straight face, but internally I know I'm in danger. I soon learn this is very good. This is spooky stories to tell when you're a dev lead who's been saying yes to everything does not debugs through alert statements. I soon learned that he doesn't know a lot about certain tech that was necessary for the project, like Ajax or MVC pattern or what sorts of things. I start picking up more and more user stories as he struggles with his work. Pretty soon the client is asking me to plan and implement these features, and that's when the real horror begins. I start writing JavaScript. I, the junior level coder who starts writing a lot of JavaScript, I need to have reactive components, but I can't use a framework or libraries. I can't count on jQuery because I can't use plugins, and we're not even sure what jQuery is being used at any given time. Oh, no. I can't get through this. I'm so sorry. I figure out I can reliably use the Ajax functions in jQuery. So I start to set something up reasonable for the Ajax, and that's about it. Then I read about this regular JavaScript called a mutation observer. So I start writing a custom framework. I can create functional representations of components and start overloading the prototypes of these functions. I feed into an engine, in quotes, that has mutation observer at its heart. It's not as bad as you're imagining. It's worse. Things happen on the site, but we don't know why. Race conditions abound, one-off by errors, off-by-one errors. And then I realize my errors are fundamental to the architecture of the framework that I wrote. I work long hours. I become bitter.
This is so beautifully written.
I work long hours. I become bitter. Yeah, it's very funny. And I'm, oh my God, desperate. I start introducing Vue.js into the project, knowing that the framework is not used elsewhere. Maybe I can get away with it. And I do get away with it. Technically, things work. Over budget and out of time, we release to production. I roll off the project a month later, but I hear stories. The company spends months and thousands of dollars to fix the project. They formally adopt Vue.js and everything to that. I am so sorry, but I learned a lot, and thank you. there were just so many
what
things.
What a train wreck.
What a train wreck. You can't look away. Once you get to the mini versions of jQuery and you don't even know which one is like useful, yeah, yikes, yikes.
Oh, man. That is just like every possible thing to go wrong. The tech lead who uses alert statements. And normally I wouldn't rip on somebody for not knowing how to do something, but the guy was a tech lead of a large JavaScript project.
And having other people underneath you and just been like, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Oh, that was a good one. So thank you to whoever wrote that. And he said, I'm inspired to write a blog post about it myself. So please, please do that.
Yes.
Lorem ipsum, the horror story comes from when I was working on a feature to break a cache on our customers' RSS feeds stored in S3 to reduce a delay when polling for updates. So this is a pretty common thing. You have an RSS feed, they probably just save the RSS feed to a text file instead of having to do all the maybe hundreds of database queries underneath. I found out the hard way that our development environments also wrote to the same S3 buckets at the same time. And instead of just breaking cache files, I rewrote production records with lorem ipsum. It doesn't say how they fixed it here, but that was probably had to rerun that script with the production.
Oh, yikes. Big yikes. Malicious compliance. I once had to embed an Ember app into an iframe in a React React app.
This is so real world.
And yes, I know. And implement a browser-side PubSub so they could interact with each other. To make matters worse, the OAuth sign-in modal opened from an element in the iframe. One day, our auth randomly stopped working because of a major browser implemented a security update to block events originating from the iframe. So we hastily added an add button to the React app that published an event so that the Ember app could subscribe to it. So the app might to block it. We quickly shipped a fix, but our leadership said it was unacceptably ugly and ordered us to undo it. We warned them that undoing it would prevent users from being able to log in. They didn't believe us. We reverted the fix, and within minutes of the deploy completing, our support team started receiving reports of the login being broken. After a couple of hours of broken log reports, the leadership told us to put it back. So this is a major Frankenstein right here. Like this is, you know, 10 neck bolts out of 10 neck bolts Frankenstein. This is horrifying.
Oh, that is, there's a whole Reddit called Malicious Compliance. And it's just stories like that where people are like, all right, I'm telling you, it's not going to work, but I'll comply.
Whatever. Do it. Cool. Ship it.
All right. We're actually, it's pretty good. We're about halfway through the stories now. So we are going to put a cap on that and pick it up next week with a whole nother hours of additional stories. And let me tell you, there is some good ones in there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm very excited. Sick picks. This is the part of the show where we talk about things that we find to be sick. Wes, do you have any sick picks for us?
I do. And this is actually something I saw on one of Adam Savage's one day builds about a year ago.
You're Adam Savaging these sick picks.
I guess Adam Savaged last week as well. So this is a LED flame effect light bulb. So this is just a light bulb that goes into any regular light fixture. And it has a actual flame effect. And it actually looks real. You think, oh, that looks cheesy. But like, this looks like a real candle or a real campfire. And what I'm doing is I'm going to put it into the light that is on the front of our porch, because like, if you've ever been to New Orleans, you know how they have these like gas lanterns that are sort of flickering. I love the look of that. So what I ended up doing, you can get them in just like a regular light bulb, which is called E62, or you can get them in the really small sockets that go into our porch light, has a small socket. So I got a couple of each of them because I think it looks really cool. The kids love it. And it just gives a really nice like ambiance without having the danger of real flame. So the one you can just go on Amazon and search for. The one I got was called Hansang LED flame light effect. And also the cool thing about it is if your light fixture is upside down, it's smart enough to know that it's upside down and it will revert the effect so that the flame isn't going downwards, but up.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
My sick pick is going to be a video game that I have been playing almost obsessively. You know what? I play games, and I play games on the weekly, like Sunday is my game night, right? Where I play video games. But this game is just so fantastic. It's called Hades. It's by Supergiant Games. I've played several of their other games before, and I've always been a fan. And this is they call it a roguelite game. I've never played roguelikes before. I don't know very much about that. But let's say Hades is this game that's themed out of like Greek mythology, right? And you play a character who is stuck in basically hell, and their father is Hades, and you're attempting to escape. That's like the long and short of it. You're attempting to escape these like layers of hell, essentially, to get out into the world. And so the way it works is that there's like, you play the first time and you maybe make it to like level 10 or something, and then you die. And then you have to start at the beginning. And the next time you're a little bit better at the game, you've gotten a couple more power-ups, you get to like level 15. And you keep going, and you end up playing almost in like a loop. But the coolest thing about this game, and I urge you as like a computer programmer to play this game and like think about it in a programming sense, there are so many variables at play here. So like as you go, there's just like 1,000, there's 5 different weapons, there's hundreds of different upgrades and whatever, and you use the Greek gods to empower yourself in various ways. But as you end up going, it is so finely balanced, so incredible that like you can tweak your setup and play the same game. I've maybe made like 50 attempts to escape, maybe even more than that. I've escaped, 20 times, and I still want to pick it up again just because every single time you play, it's like permeated and it's different and it's random enough that like you can have just entirely different experiences, even amongst the weapons. Like you could have like a sword and there's like 4 different variations of the sword, and each one substantially changes the gameplay. And what I found to be just absolutely fascinating about this game programming wise is how the heck did they get so many different variations and permutations and random ability without breaking like the challenge of the game at some point. It's always very challenging no matter what you do, and it's always very engaging. So Hades been my favorite game of the year by far, and I'm very into this game. So check it out. It's on Switch, PC, and that kind of stuff. So that's my sick pick.
Sick. Shameless plugs, mastergatsby.com. It's my latest course on learning to build websites with Gatsby and friends. And we do all the CSS in it. We use a headless CMS. It's pretty good. People are really enjoying it. It's at mastergatsby.com. Use a coupon code SYNTAX for $10 off.
Sick. My shameless plug is going to be my Animating Svelte course, which is coming out, and it's going to teach you how to animate things in Svelte. Normally that we get into the gesture stuff, and we show you how to write really neat custom animations and really take control of the look and feel of your site using Svelte. It's fantastic. So if you are interested in learning Svelte, we have courses for that. And if you are interested in really stepping up that polish meter, check out Animating Svelte only on leveluptutorials.com.
All right. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you, everybody, who submitted their spooky office story. Hopefully you have a good Halloween, and we will catch you on Monday.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.